Hey everyone. So if you are a guitarist of my generation, you basically grew up idolizing Jerry Cantrell and his massive approach to guitar tone, especially on Alice in Chains' Dirt album. That thing is just so iconic in the way that Jerry stacked multiple overdubs of multiple amps to build up this massive wall of sound. And I've been chasing that sound for years, and I've played, you know, countless Alice in Chains songs, either jamming in the bedroom or jamming with buddies. And so I finally got the chance, after 20 years of doing this, to interview Jerry himself and have a chat about the glories of guitar and Alice in Chains' forthcoming record, Rainier Fog, which comes out on August 24. Now, there's already three singles out there from the record that give you a pretty good taste of what's going on, but you know, there's more to the story of this album, and you know, typical Alice in Chains fashion, it sounds different to everything that I've ever done, while still sounding like Alice in Chains. So, you can catch a print version of this interview in the next issue of Australian Guitar Magazine, but I thought I'd let you guys hear it basically, you know, unedited, uncut, from pretty much the point I turned on the recorder. Enjoy!
Hey Jerry, how you doing?
What's happening?
Hey,
good.
We haven't met before, but when I worked at Seymour Duncan, I had the custom shop make you a little present of some Seahawks humbuckers. I hope they made it to you.
Oh, cool, dude.
Did you ever get those?
That's awesome. I remember seeing something like that. Yeah.
Cool. I just wanted to, you know, send a little thank you for all the years of kick-ass music. So that was a way I could do it.
Oh, that's great, dude. Thanks. Yeah.
So, man, I've been listening to the new record and I just love how everything you guys do sounds like Alice in Chains, but everything is a different Alice in Chains at the same... Yeah, it's always a different Alice in Chains at the same time, you know?
Yep. You're absolutely right.
So, what kind of went into this album? Like, I always wonder if you guys think about exploring a different side of what you're doing, or if it's just where your head is at.
It's really fucking... underthought and organic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really is. I can't say that we've ever sat down and had some sort of meeting before we even started, you know. Mm. It's just, you know, we all feel when it's time to do it again, and we start kind of just naturally, you know, writing and shit, and we've got a kind of good grip of stuff. And it's been long enough that we've done a couple of years of touring and maybe took a little time for ourselves, and it's time to start working again. Mm. You know, we start calling each other. Hey, man, I got a thing. Hey, check this out. You know, we start sending each other shit, and we, you know, before you know it, we've got a good grip of really solid ideas, and then we just get in a room and start fucking hashing it out. By the, you know, that process, you know, takes a period of time. It takes however long it takes. You know, and at the end of it, what we come out with is what is on the record, you know. Mm. And it's kind of fun not knowing where you're going, you know what I mean, and also not having any other expectation other than just trying to make the best music you can, you know, and seeing if you can make at the same time of writing a bunch of really cool, interesting individual songs, you know, if you can get a body of work that kind of fits together as a fucking as an album, you know. And the cool thing about it is that we've done it before, and so we know that we can get there. Mm. And like you said, you know, we're really lucky to have a fucking sound. So pretty much any direction where we're going to go, it's going to sound like us just by the mechanics of how we sound as individual players and how we fit together in a band. And the newness is the material, you know, that it's a new record. It's a whole new fucking, whole new new batch of tunes, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, that, I think I'm really proud of the fact that every one of our records, it sounds completely different than another one.
Yeah. I
mean, but at the same time, it's totally us. Yeah.
I mean, there's the fact that, you know, you've used the same producer on the last three, and again, there's still variation there.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah.
So what led you to keep using Nick? Just happy with the relationship? And
yeah, he's just a great dude. You know, we got introduced to Nick by Dave Grohl.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were first kicking around the idea of kind of getting back together and playing some shows before we even talked about writing or recording or continuing on, you know, we went out and did a bunch of shows and we started coming up with material, and then we decided to take the next step, which would become, you know, the record that is Black Gives Way to Blue. So, but I remember talking to Dave throughout that process, you know, and how supportive he was and of, you know, we're old friends and you know, we respect the hell out of each other, professionally and artistically as well. So, you know, to have him give us a lot of support by, you know, offering his studio to record, and then also, you know, had a really strong suggestion that we should work with Nick, you know, and like, okay, we'll check him out. So we had him come down and we played some of our stuff for him. And, you know, from the first fucking moment, he's in the middle of the room with like some drumsticks in his hand, and he's like fake singing and shit. And like, when I would play a riff, he'd like play air guitar, like right there in the middle of the fucking band.
Yeah.
And his energy was just infectious, you know, it was infectious. He loves fucking rock, as much as we do. And he just wants to make fucking great music, you know, just like we do. And so, you know, we hit it off on that record and went through. That was a real kind of formative process, you know, reforming a band, you know, and starting up again is maybe even almost more difficult than starting a band, you know what I mean? So he went through that process with us, and, you know, we just kind of are of like minds and are trying to get to the same place and have a similar way of getting there, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just a great dude to be around.
Yeah. I always love hearing when producers really get into it. Like, I saw an Alice in Chains. Sorry, I saw a Jane's Addiction documentary once where Bob Ezrin was producing them, and to get into the vibe, he like put on a sparkly shirt and eyeliner and spiked up his hair and stuff, and he's like, I just want to live like you guys for a day.
I would say that Nick is, you know, he fits in with whoever he works with, and I think a lot of the times he works with bands that he really likes, you know. And I think that that's a big part of it, you know. We've you know, throughout our career, you know, when it comes to, you know, record labels, management, production people or crew members or whatever, you want to go with the guy that's fucking excited to fucking have the gig, you know, that like, fuck, man, I want to fucking do this. I want to fucking work with you, you know, not like, yeah, you know, I might be able to do something with you guys, you know, fuck you. You know, you know, I want somebody that's all in, just like we are, you know?
Yeah.
And Nick is that, you know, Nick is that for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, dude. I just turned 40, so I'm from the era when, like, you guys were the soundtrack to my high school and everything, you know? And your guitar sound on Dirt was really fucking iconic. Like, everyone I know, even now, all the players my age and stuff are like, that's the holy grail. What's going into that sound?
Well, you know, that's something I've been trying to chase myself, you know, and I think I've gotten close to kind of coming back to that.
Yeah, that's kind of what brought me to this.
It's just a head, you know, it's a head that I could never get, actually, and actually recently was offered to me again by the estate of Brian Carlson, who was Dave Jordan's engineer on those two records, and it was a modified Marshall, and I think it was modded by Bogner.
Yeah,
which is why I ended up fucking playing Bogner's for many years, and Brian recently passed, and someone representing his estate called me and asked me if I wanted to buy this, but they wanted me to buy a whole bunch of other gear with it that I didn't need. I'm like, I just want that.
Yeah.
That's the head.
Yeah. You
know? That's the head that I recorded both of those two records on. And that's my fucking sound.
Yeah.
and I offered a good chunk of money for it, but they didn't take it because they wanted me to buy a bunch of other shit. But,
oh man.
That's all right. Dave Friedman and I made a head that's every bit as that good.
Oh, that thing is incredible. And, that's like my dream amp you've made.
And the
right
Double
there.
J, you know, it's a great fucking sounding amp.
Yeah, no,
I do agree that both, you know, the guitar sounds on that record are pretty fucking outstanding, you know?
Yeah.
And, that's, you know, I'll take a little credit for playing it and give David Jordan a little credit for recording it and give Brian Carlstrom some credit for fucking loaning me his amp.
Yeah. So what's going
on? I want that fucking amp, man. I'm not going to pay through the nose to get it.
Yeah. See, I think if there was a pedal that did that, like, because I understand Jordan used, like, multiple amps or whatever in that whole 3-amp setup thing on Dirt. If there was a pedal that did that, fuck, that'd sell billions.
It would.
So what went into the guitar tone on this record?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a good place to start, is because let's start with Facelift and Dirt, and you know, I learned a lot of stuff from Dave. You know, a couple of the things I have used on every single record that I learned from Dave, and one was layering, multiple amps and multiple guitars, and for different frequencies and shit, and different parts of different songs. Another was using a baritone. He had a Jerry Jones baritone that we used for color on both of those records, and I've used a baritone on every record I've ever done now. And certain sections, sometimes is a little kind of signature lead line or a color line, but mostly it's just kind of under there, like in choruses and shit, or to give a lift in some spot, or just add that extra, you know, that fucking deep, fucking growly, bawly, ballsy thing, you know. Learned a lot from Dave, and I've, you know, kind of continued some of those traditions I learned from him. And working with Nick is like a whole new level of that, because that dude will try anything.
Yeah.
We need a fucking flying V, and we need a cigar box amp and this pedal. I'm like, okay, let's go. You know, like, one of the pieces of gear we used on this record, there's a couple of really interesting new additions to the arsenal. There's a song called Drone on the record that's just fucking got some gnarly tones to it as well. And in the kind of chorus, that heavy chorus section, there's a cigar box amp that he bought at the fucking Pike Place Market in Seattle for like $150. And we just threw a mic on it and plugged into it. And it's not the kind of thing that's like when you plug it in and you listen to it, like you go like, that's fucking the greatest thing ever. But when you put it in the track, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It kind of cements all of the other tracks together. So it's not so much a matter of like, hey, I can hear that. But if you took it away, you would definitely notice it was missing. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
It's so funny how that can happen. Like, I've got this shitty phaser pedal that I got when I was like 12 years old, and it sounds horrible and really noisy. But if you add one track of that mixed kind of down, it just makes everything alive.
That's right. Absolutely, man. Yeah.
So what about guitars?
It's great experimenting with different shit, you know?
Yeah.
And I got a my buddy Mike Tempesta, who has been a longtime friend of ours, the Tempesta brothers. He works for Gretsch now, and he asked me if I wanted. They were doing a limited run of replicas of Malcolm Young's guitar.
It's fucking
iconic Gretsch.
Yeah.
And it's replicated to look exactly like it. And there was just a handful. I'm not sure how many were made. There were like 60 or something like that. 60 something. Anyway, I got one of them, and I used that on a few songs. I think I used it on Maybe and Fly and maybe a couple other tunes, but man, there's a really fucking cool tone to that fucking guitar, you know? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was just fucking around with on a recording yesterday and used that guitar again.
Yeah.
It's a really cool, warm, kind of barky, straight-up rock and roll tone to it, you know?
Yeah. I know you've toured with my buddy Dean Del Rey, and he... Have you heard that guy sing...
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard that guy sing AC/DC? Fuck.
I have. He's fucking badass.
Yeah, man, you gotta...
He's badass, man.
Drag out the Malcolm guitar and do some songs with him someday.
He's such a great dude, man. I love that guy. The times we had him out to open up for us, and just seeing him do his act, you know, at different various shows in the States. He's just a fucking great dude.
Totally.
Super sharp fucking mind.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, fucking hits you at fucking nut level every time. It's fucking great.
Uh-huh.
Great dude.
Yeah.
And he can kick the shit out of some AC/DC.
So it looks like our time's nearly up, so I'd better ask the obvious question. Any plans at the moment to visit us down under again?
Yeah, you know, we're just starting, so... The record doesn't come out till what? I think it's the 24th or something like that. We're trying to time it with whatever the Seattle show is here coming up, which I'm going to be heading up there soon. So we've done one leg in the States. We did one leg in Europe, which we just finished a couple weeks ago, and then we're gonna hit the States again a few more times. Go around the States when the record comes out. Hit South America, and then. I kind of predict that we'll probably be working well into next year. So we got a lot of, we'll probably go back to Europe, try to get over to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get to Australia and Japan again on this run as well. So I would bet we'll probably be over there next year. We'll see. Well, hopefully it works out that way. But I know the rest of the guys and I intend to take this tour as far as we can go with it and as long as we can stand it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, before I get the wrap-up message, I'll just throw in some more questions until they tell us to stop, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to ask about, this is your third record with William, and obviously you'd played with him before he joined Alice in Chains, but how do you two bounce off each other as guitar players?
Well, we're very different, and that's an asset. You know, I don't need him to sound like me. I got me down. So.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't need to. You know, he doesn't. You know, he just needs to. He just needs to be himself, and that's all he's been since he's been in the band. So you know, it's the he's probably had to lean more toward us, artistically speaking, than we've had to lean towards him, because the band kind of has a sound, and the way that Sean and I and Mike we've been the core of the sound for fucking years, and that really hasn't changed, you know. So you know, he's put in his work to fit in, and he's done the work to fucking to earn a spot in this band, and he did that years ago. Mm. You know what I mean? So we're completely at ease with how things work internally in the band, and it's a great asset to have to have two guys that can carry lead duties in this band, and also we kind of always kind of have a line that it takes two guys to fly this plane vocally. And it's nice to have another guitar in the mix, you know, because although Lane did play occasionally, he wasn't like a full-time guitar player. So with a lot of the layering that we've talked about and a lot of the multiple parts that are in Alice songs, we can kind of represent those a little bit more having both of us play. So, it's a good team.
Yeah.
It's a good team to have vocally and on guitar.
Yeah.
So
have you guys ever considered doing another acoustic EP now with William?
Yeah, we may do that. I mean, I think that there's a lot of that material is peppered through all three of these records.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So we kind of combined some of those elements of the EPs into the records, you know, without really, you know, planning to do so.
Yeah.
That's just kind of a natural part of the band. But, you know, of course that could happen, you know. We do and have done, you know, with William, acoustic shows and actually just straight up acoustic tours, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, we're just going to go out and play acoustic on this run. So we've done that. So it would be pretty easy and pretty natural to do that. It's just, we just haven't done it yet.
Yeah. There was a song that I wanted to talk about. The second last, I can't remember the title, and it's on my phone, which I can't access right now. But the second last track, the bass tone in that is fucking monstrous. What was Mike doing there?
What's that?
The bass tone on the second I think it's the second last track. I'm just trying to check it on my phone.
Oh, it's never fade, I think.
Yeah, there's a killer bass tone on that.
Yeah, I mean, Mike's got a fucking amazing sound, you know, and it's very unique. You know, when he came into the band, you know, Mike Starr, in my opinion, was, you know, one of the fucking most solid bass players I've ever played with in my life.
Yeah.
And I still am really proud of the work that he and I did together as the stringed instruments guys, you know, that fucking kind of held the notes together.
Mm.
And, you know, but Mike is a different animal, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm just as proud of all of the music and the years that we've made with him. And he certainly has his own identity. So, and it, you know, when he came into the band, he injected a lot of energy into the EP, you know, and a lot of writing and stuff and vibe. And so, you know, he continues to be an important and indelible force in this band, live and in the studio.
Yeah.
And just as a person, he's a fucking great dude, man.
Yeah.
You know, he's my fucking bro.
Yeah. Well, I remember when
that song's an interesting song, you know. Mm. It's a little... I think there's two songs that are maybe just to kind of stretch the limits of what you might expect on this record. I would say that's probably one of them, Never Fade, and Maybe is probably the other. So it's not like wildly fucking different, but it's maybe just some fresh territory that we fucking tore up, you know, so.
Yeah, cool. One more guitar question, I guess. You still using that main old G&L with the stickers and you know all the stuff on it?
Yeah, you know what? I still have both of those guitars, but yeah. I've kind of retired them.
Yeah.
The original blue dress.
Mm, that's the one.
I still use them in the studio. Mm. You know, but they're old. You know, they're fucking old. And the blue dress developed a little bit of a hairline crack through it. You know.
Yeah.
Not enough to break it in half, but I just don't want to put it through the stress of a fucking road and the bumps and all that shit. I hate to have that thing fucking fall in half on me. So
mm-hmm.
I just, that and the No War, my two original G&Ls that I fucking have always pretty much played live on every tour. I've kind of retired those a few tours back.
Yeah.
I still bust them out in the studio for sure.
Mm.
But they don't go on the road with me anymore.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that looks like our time up for sure. I'm surprised we haven't got the tap on the shoulder yet, but, man, thanks for the chat. It's been really cool. And I can't wait to see you guys again.
Oh man. Good talking to you, man.
You too.
Thanks, Peter. I'm just a nice person.
Thank you.
To give you that time.
Thanks.
Thank you. I agree.
Thanks.
Cheers. See ya.
See ya.